Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
We're back.
We needed a break.
Yes. Well, after Easter, we just sat down in front of the mic last week and basically just like, oh, we cannot go on.
No, the show could not go on.
We needed a little mental break for 1 week with everything going on, obviously, like you all are experiencing, and just the post-Easter kaplumps.
There are good days and bad days and good weeks and bad weeks.
That was a tough week. So let's catch up with what's been going on then. So I am going to be teaching a merit badge online starting tomorrow or Tuesday. As you hear this, it's probably yesterday. It'll be the first one. The local Boy Scout Council reached out and said, hey, is anyone willing to try to do some virtual merit badge classes online? I'm a brand new merit badge counselor, and I stupidly said yes because I don't even know what I'm doing in general with merit badge counseling. I've never done it, and now I'm suddenly having to do it online, and I'm flailing at it, and I feel bad for the kids, but you know, we're all learning. It's only 4 weeks, and then I can escape the agony of my failure as I do it. Good luck, kids.
I know exactly what that feels like because I, too, have been thrown into the deep end in teaching more than once.
Yes.
My first semester as a graduate student when I was teaching a composition class, basically it was just like, okay, here's your class. Have fun.
Teach them composition.
Teach them how to write. Yeah, that was fun.
It's a good thing all those parents spent all that money to send their kids to Boston College.
Yeah, that was harrowing.
There's the value of a college education, folks.
Yeah, not to mention, by the way, that was the fall of 2001. What happened in the fall of 2001, anybody?
Oh, in September of 2001, something big happened that was very distracting.
Yeah, the day that I was supposed to have my very, very first student-teacher conferences in my office was September the 11th, 2001.
Did the conferences actually happen?
They did because they were early in the morning. And actually, right before my first conference, my buddy from the office next door popped his head in and he said, a plane has just flown into the World Trade Center. This was my friend Nick, who was watching the BBC streaming on his laptop. I don't know how he even got his laptop to get a signal in the basement room.
Again, this is 20 years ago.
Right.
When such things were not as easy as they are today.
We did not at that moment really understand the import of that. Like,
yeah.
And, but yeah, the,
so the start of your teaching career was not auspicious.
it was rocky. Let me just say that it was rocky.
Let's just hope that this Tuesday, and as you're hearing this, you'll know by now that some similar awful event has not happened to interrupt my...
The awful event has already happened.
Well, that's right. We're living in the awful event that's causing us to have an online virtual merit badge class.
Right.
So, yeah. So there's that. The other thing that's been going on is, like a lot of people, we've kind of decided to do some home stuff. Like, hey, you know, I mean, we're home all the time anyway, but like, it's spring. We can't go anywhere. So let's try to do something outdoorsy. So I was going to build a outdoor garden bed that we've been
talking about for like, right.
So when
years.
Years ago, I built some garden beds that have since rotted away and died off and all this sort of thing. And we kind of gave up the vegetable garden idea when we got up to four kids.
Yeah.
And they were all running around. It was very difficult to keep track of the garden. And I think when we had the tomato blight, I think actually that really did us in that year.
Yeah.
After that, we were like, oh, what's the point? So, but we're back. And so I came up with this nice it's a high garden bed thing. And I came with Anthony, and I planned it out. And that's all we're doing this. He's helping me as part of a Cub Scout achievement belt loop thingy. And so, we came up with a plan. We got the parts list. I ordered it all from Home Depot on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Home Depot's online ordering is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, so I ordered.
Even in good times.
Even in good times. I ordered stuff. First, I go to the website. I can't get to the shopping cart. I don't know why. It just doesn't show up. It's not there. I'm like, did they take it away? No, there's something wrong with their site that day. Didn't tell me that. I just figured that. Finally ordered it. Stuff is back ordered. And they have this new thing where you can order online, and then they will tell you, come to the store with your printout of your order. We'll tell you when to come to the store, and then we'll bring it out to your car and load it in your car for you, like curbside. That sounds really great, doesn't it?
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. So it was Thursday a couple weeks ago, and I ordered. I waited to order till the day I knew I would have time to go over there. Didn't hear anything. Tried to call. It was on hold for 45 minutes and finally had to hang up because I had something else to do. And then I waited and I waited. And then Saturday morning, I get up and I call, and I sat on hold for another hour and a half, maybe. I think that was, because I was not going to give up till I got someone on that phone. And finally, they're like, oh, yeah, it's ready. Actually, the guy was like, let me call the store. Oh, yeah, it's ready, except the rebar that you wanted, it wasn't in stock. I'm like, so I could have come and got everything else, but you didn't tell me. And so I go there, and the guy's like, we can't find your order. I'm like, they just called this morning. Oh, that's you. Oh, yeah. We got your order. So, oh my gosh. And then the capper is, they were going to I had to get a refund on the rebar order, because they charge you as soon as you order it, by the way. You pay up front, which I think is kind of not good. But so, you have to go into the store and get the refund process. So I go into the store, I wait at the service desk, which, you know, everybody's masked up and it's all backed up and everyone's 6 feet apart. And finally I get up there, and she's like, I can't do this. This is already automatic. After having been in there for half an hour, I go home. I wait 2-3 days. I call back, and he's like, oh yeah, that hasn't gone through yet. Let me process your refund for you. I'm like, ah. So I have all the stuff. Now I got to go to Lowe's and get the rebar, because they apparently have it in stock.
Apparently.
I hate to say it. We own Home Depot stock in our IRA, but I may be selling that off and buying Lowe's stock after this.
wait and see if the Lowe's experience is any better.
Exactly. Although I did get one of those email survey, tell us how we did.
Oh, boy.
So that I'm going to fill it out. I just need some time to fill it out. So the garden bed is in our future, and I've still got to figure out where I'm going to get all the dirt from, the soil for the garden bed. I'll probably get from a local home, the landscaper.
Hopefully
company.
Before the growing season ends.
The whole growing season hasn't even started. It's like still freezing outside. We're still getting snow. I'm not in a hurry.
I know.
I mean, there's a forecast for like flurries on Tuesday. It's May almost. Drive me crazy. Anyway, so that's how it's. I mean, this is all, you know, on top of, you know, hey, we're quarantined and we can't go out and we have to wear masks everywhere like we're bandits. That's actually the best part of it, is I can pretend to be a bandit everywhere I go. Hi, I'm Mal. I'm a brown coat. I'm here to rob your train and buy the milk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
It is weird.
We got the official phone call this week from the town saying that now it's
now you're required.
Required.
Anyone over 2 is required to wear a mask going into any retail establishment or communal residential complex.
Right. So if you lived in like an apartment building,
exactly,
you would have to wear a mask
in the common areas.
In common areas.
Yes. Anyone over 2, unless you have a reason, like a medical reason that you can't wear a mask. People who have like compromised breathing or something like that.
Right.
Which, you know, then those people now have to be harassed by everyone where they go that they're not wearing a mask. But, you know, that's life now, I guess. But it is weird just to go out and everywhere you go, everyone's got a mask on. It's kind of, it's surreal.
It is.
And part of the reason is because the two of the highest concentrations of the virus in Massachusetts are the towns on either side of us, and we're kind of stuck in the middle with you, like the old song from what was the Tarantino movie? Oh, Reservoir Dogs, stuck in the middle with you. Anyway, never neither here nor there. But we're stuck in the middle of the virus between these two towns, so it's kind of harrowing. So, but you got a chance to go out with the kids and get a little outdoor time.
We did. I was looking at the forecast, and it's just like cold and wet and cold and wet. And then we had one day when it was like sunny, and that was the day I had scheduled for my weekly grocery pickup. Of course, it always happens. The mm-hmm. good day always happens. I've got like something planned. But I sort of decided I'm going to try to get through the grocery run as quickly as possible, get home, and maybe we can still salvage the day and actually get out. And it worked. I got most of the groceries, you know.
Most of what they had available for us to be able to get.
And then got home and we took a hike in our town forest. Which is just, it's less than a mile away, but we drive to the entrance so that we can have more hiking time in the actual woods.
Well, plus you also have to cross a couple of big streets to get there, which is not as safe.
So we have a nice little town forest. There's a couple of ponds in it and some, you know, hills and trees and things. And we took a nice hike. The kids had fun. They like to play at ambushing each other
as colonial soldiers or rebels and imperials
or Indians and settlers it changes.
Yes.
This time, there were some really good ambushes. Isabella managed to spot a red-tailed hawk. She was very excited about that. And what we think might have been a vulture. Lucy fell within the first 2 minutes of us being on the trail. And I discovered that we were not prepared, bad scouts that we were. The first aid kit was not in the backpack that I had on my back.
Mm.
So Isabella and Sophia had to run back to the car with the keys. They got bandages, which there was a first aid kit in the car.
There's a first aid kit all over the car.
Yeah, kind of scattered all over the car. They ran back, and then we bandaged Lucy's poor little knee, which was bleeding. And then Ben and Sophie took turns carrying Lucy on their backs.
So sweet.
For the like 5 minutes before she forgot that her knee hurt and
started running around
like crazy. Of course. I mean, I knew she was going to, like, you just have to get past that initial, I'm about to die. And then she was fine.
Right. Now, by the way, I was actually thinking of the earlier trip that you took, because we haven't talked about that one. The Overlook, Osprey Overlook.
Oh, did we not talk about that yet?
We have not been here for 2 weeks. And the week before that, we talked about Easter, so.
Oh, right. So, yeah, we found a new nature preserve.
Massachusetts, Eastern Massachusetts especially, is lousy with nature preserves. I mean, lousy as in, like, they're everywhere.
Right.
Like, whether it's a town forest or in private, like, conservation land or state land. I mean, it's amazing.
Right. So the nearby town of Weymouth has a series of parks that are all linked by hiking trails. In total, they're called the Back River Trail.
There's two rivers in Weymouth, the Four River and
the Back River. Right. So the Back River Trail, we parked at a little park called Osprey Overlook Park, which is called that because there are three osprey nests, like man-made posts on which the birds can nest. And the birds are nesting there, which is really cool. So it's like a marshy river estuary. The first time we went, the tide was coming in, and then this time the tide was very out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it connects to another little park called Great Esker Park. And an esker, I have discovered, is a geological formation. It's a gigantic heap of gravel left by a retreating glacier.
Well, there you go.
And Great Esker is the biggest esker in Massachusetts.
You have a Great Esker of Legos.
So I guess it's slightly different than a moraine because it's not at the end, but it's just deposited by the glacier. I don't know.
I can't hear moraine without thinking that awful Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode.
I don't know that one.
You will be talking about it on Secrets of Star Trek soon.
Okay, well, stay tuned.
Hala Moraine. Go ahead.
So anyway, the first time we just saw the nest and we saw one osprey flying overhead. But the second time last week, was a really great trip. We saw an osprey fishing. We saw it like hover over the river and then dive several times. And the third time, it actually came up with a fish, which was super cool. We also saw a painter doing a landscape painting, several people walking their dogs, all keeping a nice safe distance.
Of course.
And, and then as we were heading back towards the car, tired and footsore and ready to go home, I spotted a bird perched on among the reeds, and I thought, I wonder what that is. It looks different. And as I kind of stalked closer, it flew off but perched next to another bird in a tree. And I got close enough with my long camera lens.
Longish.
It's not a great lens, but it's better than...
Better than your bare eyes.
My bare eyes. Yeah. Much better. I managed to snap a couple of photos. It was a very smallish bird, not much bigger than like a dove. So I'm thinking, what is it? But when it flew, it did not fly like a songbird. And as we watched these two birds perch, one of them took off and it was definitely a raptor. So we were very curious. We got home and we blew up the photos on the computer screen so we could see them really big. And we were able to, using our bird book, identify it as a kestrel. So we actually saw a pair of kestrels, male and female, and Bella was over the moon excited.
You got to share it with her ornithology class online, which was neat. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, we got some good photographs and some fun bird IDs. Really, we've been winning at birding.
Yeah, lucky to get out. That's better than I've done. I was just saying today, other than going to the drugstore down a half a mile away, the furthest I've gone from home in over a month is to the Home Depot parking lot and back. I mean, I just haven't been able to get out.
Need to schedule you a recreation day.
I mean, it's just I'm so busy with podcasts and editing and all that, all the work involved. It's hard to get away, but I do need some time to get away and get outside to something recreational. So awesome. So speaking of educational things, we had, everybody's probably, I'm making an assumption. You may have heard about this article about homeschooling. If you're at all interested in homeschooling or know people who are homeschoolers, you've probably seen them share this article from Harvard Magazine, from the May-June 2020 edition, so it's brand new. Which terrible timing, by the way, for this article, which is it's screed against homeschooling. Homeschooling, parent rights absolutism versus child rights to education and protection. Because homeschoolers are not interested in educating and protecting their kids, but whatever. By this professor at Harvard named Elizabeth Bartolet. And lots of people have really torn the article apart. But the best response I've seen, or one of the best responses, I've seen some pretty good ones, was this one that you shared, Melanie, by mm-hmm. this guy's name is Kenneth Pike. He's a professor of law and philosophy at Florida Institute of Technology. So that was his bio. Called A Bad Time to Hate Homeschool. It's on ARC Digital is the website anyway. But he makes some really good points. He says, he notes that she says, this is a quote, "Unregulated homeschooling badly compromises the development of capacities for autonomy in the children subjected to it. The children in some of these homes are being schooled quite intentionally for lives of submission to authority, not for autonomy. They are discouraged from developing either the will or the skills to break those bonds." And he says, "To single out homeschool as a learning environment in which submission to authority is objectionably prized above autonomy makes one wonder just how many kinds of school Bartolet or West, who she quotes, have attended." That was the thing that stuck out to me was, like, this is precisely one of the reasons why we homeschool, is because public schools, many of them, and yours may be better than most, but from our point of view, a lot of public schools engage in intentionally training children for submission to a certain forms of ideology that do not allow for autonomy or critical thinking skills, at least, to kids to think for themselves using the principles of natural law and the way the world works and that sort of thing. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah. His basic point is that all of the arguments that she makes against homeschooling could be made just about as easily for against public schooling.
Right.
Anyway, he picks, she cherry picks the worst elements of homeschooling, like the worst case scenarios, and pits them against the best case scenarios of public school.
Theoretical best case scenarios. Right. She doesn't even cite actual data. She cites the best that public schools or schools in general, public or private or whatever, could possibly do.
Right. Which, it's problematic because, as we all know, there are, of course, some bad homeschoolers.
Right.
There are also very bad public schools, and there are kids who receive educational neglect at the hands of parents who claim to be homeschooling them while not actually doing so. But there are students who aren't really receiving an education from the public schools or private schools that are claiming to educate them. Like, if you pick the worst case scenarios from either one, it's not going to look good. So that's not the way to make a case against either public schooling or private schooling or homeschooling. You pit the best against the best,
right?
Not the worst against the best.
Right. In fact, there are some homeschools who do the same thing against public schools. They cite the worst possible things that public schools could do, and then then they say everyone should homeschool then, because it will always be like this perfect. And as we know, as we always tell people, you know, homeschooling may not be for you. You do what's right for your family.
Right.
And for some families, homeschooling is not the right thing. And that's fine. But so don't pit the theoretical best against the worst possible situation. For example, she cites that some homeschool children are abused by their parents. Okay. The U.S. Department of Education says that 10% of public school children are subjected to abuse and harassment at school, and 1 in 3 middle school students are subjected to bullying. I mean, is that, like, these are the same arguments? Like, you could cite the same things against schools.
In other words, what we should really do is what's best for your child. If your child is being bullied at public school, then obviously homeschooling is probably a better choice. If the child is being abused at home, then obviously removing them from the home is the best choice for the child. But that doesn't make an argument either against public schools or against homeschooling, because those are obviously bad situations that need to be addressed because they're a bad situation.
Right.
So, yeah, I thought it was a really good article.
There's one other point he makes, which is really good. He says this is the worst possible time for this article to come out against homeschooling, not because everyone's now homeschoolers, as everyone has been saying. What is going on now is not, like, for all these public school kids at home, they're not homeschooling, because this is not what homeschooling generally looks like. They're remote learning or online learning or whatever. But the reason it's the worst possible time is because it proves that these kids being able to go home and do things at home proves that a diversity of educational opportunities, homeschooling, charter schools, homeschooling from unschooling all the way up to school in a box curricula, a diversity of these opportunities, these possibilities, made it possible for us to almost seamlessly go from kids in school to kids at home doing something in general.
Right,
it's not perfect. There are some kids who are not getting a good education. But the fact is there was something in place.
There were structures, there were technologies that had been developed by homeschoolers, which now are being adopted by classroom teachers.
Right.
To greater or lesser extents, greater or lesser success. For some people, it's not working at all because, you know, you're not really making a reason's choice to do this. You're being thrown into it. That's not really.
But it's, as he says, it's clear that we as a nation were much better prepared to accommodate emergency distance learning than we would have otherwise been had homeschooling, in the minimal sense of doing school at home, been forbidden or even just onerously regulated in the first place. I think that's a good point. So it just drives me. I don't think, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled time and again, and he cites Wisconsin versus Yoder, that which by the name you can probably guess has to do with Amish families, but the parents have the right to choose the schooling for their children. And so I don't see that changing anytime soon, but it just betrays this desire to constantly take away rights from parents to raise their kids and to have that authority over them in favor of some government authority. And I think what it boils down to is there are people who don't like our values. Real, they don't like our traditional moral values or religious values, and the fact that we're handing it on to our children. And so this is an excuse to implement a way to prevent us from doing that as much as possible.
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of that and of, again, looking at the worst case scenarios and seeing, you know, where there's abuse then in one place, well, it must be much more widespread and rampant, and therefore we must stomp out all possibilities of such.
Yeah, I'm much more cynical on this than you are, because Harvard law professors, at the minimum, should not be that susceptible to such bad, obviously bad argumentation, but I suppose. Yes. Anyway, so it's interesting. I'll put links to both articles in the show notes so that you can check them out for yourself. They're worth reading if you have any interest in, frankly, if you have any interest in schooling at all. So look, should we talk about what we're cooking or not?
Oh, I feel like cooking, we've been in a major slump. I mean, partly
I think
just
Easter did us in.
Easter did us in. I mean, I usually kind of like go all out for Easter and then kind of
for a couple weeks afterward, just eating standard spaghetti, right. the handful of the same things we usually make.
Yeah, the old fallbacks. That plus, well, you know, the grocery stores are...
We're having a hard time getting the ingredients we usually get. Yeah. I mean, we haven't been able to get a package of chicken thighs in a while, which is we eat chicken thighs every week almost.
The frozen vegetables are not being restocked in our local grocery store. Fresh produce is generally pretty good, although there were no jalapenos and there was no garlic this week.
Really weird gaps, just like individual things that just aren't there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, we've been making some things we've talked before. Like I made that chicken fricassee dish again that we talked about before. So some of the dishes that we've talked about. I don't want to go over the same ground again. We've ordered in a couple times just because A, it supports a local restaurant, and B, we were tired and didn't feel like cooking anything out of what we had. So we had from the local barbecue place one night, and we had some Thai another night. So that is tonight. I made a new recipe. It was a butter chicken recipe. Indian.
It was pretty tasty.
Recipe. It was pretty good. I'd make some tweaks next time. I followed the recipe pretty closely, but I'd make some tweaks. It definitely needs more sauce.
Yeah,
definitely needs more sauce. And I'd add some like you like to do. I'd add some vegetables, like maybe if we had cauliflower.
We actually had some cauliflower in the freezer. If you'd asked.
Well, no, I didn't. I wasn't thinking of adding extra things, but I would. Right. But if next time I'd add like peas and potatoes and cauliflower,
yeah,
and maybe some leftover green beans if we had them in there, whatever, just to kind of bulk it up, because it was like a lot of Indian dishes. It envisions itself as one main dish among a bunch of others, as opposed to a one pot meal, which we tend to do.
Yeah, I don't really have, I don't know how people have the energy to do like a whole bunch of little side dishes.
And once in a while, we'll do a couple like that, the carrot and cabbage dish that you do sometimes.
I do like that one. And
it's not too hard to do.
It's a pretty easy dish. Yeah. I didn't have cabbage, but.
Right. But so we get that. That was good. And most of them liked it. Well, back up, rewind. Two of them liked it. And then then the other three had I made it just a chicken breast that broiled it in the oven, and they had that with rice. Because, you know, what are you going to do? So that was the cooking. There's not a whole lot to. Hopefully we've got some things that may be coming. I've been grilling more too. That's the other thing. So the weather, we've had a few
weather
days
permitting.
Of cooperation. Yeah. So I was able to grill some pork chops a couple of times and some things like that. So. Hopefully, as the weather continues to improve, it looks like I'm looking like next week, 60s, high 60s and mid 60s. Woohoo! I never thought I'd imagine like I'd be looking at May 1st and going, oh, it's mid 60s. Yes.
That does actually sound kind of balmy.
It does sound better.
Meanwhile, I'm talking to my parents in Texas, and my dad says it was in the 90s this last week and it was really hot.
I mean, I don't particularly want 90s either.
No,
I like spring.
I am not at all missing the 90 degree weather.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, poor dad. He overdid it in the garden and had a little fainting spell. So
oh yeah, that's right. So they're keeping a close eye on him.
Yeah, there's the doctors actually. He talked to his doctor and they ordered a heart monitor, which fortunately they can do like by phone and by mail. He didn't even have to go into the office.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
So
yeah. So
oh yeah, speaking of which, we actually had our first telehealth physical this week.
Yes, for the two older girls.
The two older girls. Not much that the pediatrician could do.
Via FaceTime.
Via FaceTime. But she was gamely, you know.
Stick out your tongue and go ah to the camera.
she did check in with us, which was nice. And it was good to hear her voice and see her face. And she said she had never really been done any video chatting before, so this was new ground for her. But she was able to inform us that the pediatrician's office has one. They've now divided their two office locations, and one of them is for sick kids and the other is for well kids, so that if we do get sick, there is a place where we can go.
Well, speaking of healthcare visits, too, I mean, poor Bella, she was supposed to get her
braces off
last week. And so that's all on hold. And who knows when she'll be able to get them off, the poor thing. I mean, I just feel so bad for her. It's bad enough to have braces on, but you have a date and you know it's going to come off. And she hasn't said a thing.
She has been very stoical.
Yes. But I know she would love to have them off. Ugh, poor thing. I just feel so bad. All right. So let's move on to our next segment. We want to talk about what we're reading or watching. I got a bunch of stuff, but before I get to that, and I'm not going to cover it all, but before I get to that, do you have anything that you want to mention? I know you've been having some trouble settling on reading material.
I have been having a really hard time focusing. I mean, I've got several books that I've kind of started and put down and started and put down. And this week, I'm about halfway through a novel called The Lady and the Unicorn by Rumer Godden, who's one of my favorites. It's one of her early novels. It's set in India, in Calcutta. And it involves three sisters.
Religious sisters.
No.
Oh, sisters. Like biological sisters. Okay.
Three girls who are Eurasian. So they're mixed.
Dad is British. Mom is.
Well, their mom is dead, but they might even be like multiple generations into.
Okay.
The mixing family trees. But anyway, so they don't fit in with the Indian society, but they also don't really fit in with British society. So they're sort of stuck in this middle ground where they don't quite fit in. And one of the girls falls in love with a English boy. And I like it so far. It's well, there's been some grim stuff about like
illness and death.
Oh, yeah. Dysentery. And
because why not?
But there's a mystery that there seems to be a ghost, perhaps. The house that the girls are living in, they have one part of the house, but seems to have been built by French emigres, maybe fleeing the French Revolution. They found a sundial in the garden that has a French inscription on it and some bas reliefs of unicorns.
Hence
the title, Lady and the Unicorn. So there's a mystery. There's a girl who's been spotted with a dog and wearing a blue ball gown, and they're trying to figure out who she might have been.
Is the unicorn a symbol of French royalty?
Yeah, but the unicorn in this is actually a reference to a series of tapestries that's in the Cluny Museum in Paris, The Lady and the Unicorn, and they depict a unicorn hunt. They also depict... The Five Senses, I think.
Okay. That sounds familiar. I think I've heard that.
Anyway, the sort of final tapestry in the series shows the lady with the unicorn, and it has a sort of mysterious inscription, A mon seul désir, my only desire, which people are kind of not quite sure exactly what it refers to. Anyway, so there's kind of a mystery at the heart of this, like the unicorn, the tapestry, the lady.
Interesting. So speaking of unicorns, I watched Tiger King.
How does that have to do with unicorns?
I don't know. Fictional animals. I don't know. Bad haircuts. things that shouldn't exist.
I do not understand why you had any desire to watch that.
Well, because everybody in the world watched it. So now I had to like, what is going on? Why
fear
is
of missing out?
Yes. My son and I, Anthony and I both have FOMO. He has a much worse case of it than I do, but
I do not understand this at all.
But I would, well, I
do not understand the fascination.
I was curious and people were asking me what I thought of it. And given that I do podcasting about pop culture and stuff like that, I thought I should look at it. It was oddly fascinating in a look at that car accident. I can't look away sort of way. I felt like afterward, I mean, for one thing, if you watch it or if you've watched it, it is manipulative. It is the way it is shot and edited is reality TV, totally like stitching things together out of context to make it appear to say something that it isn't saying. I totally saw it in like three different times where they were making somebody appear to be reacting to something, but they weren't reacting to that. Clearly they were reacting to something that happened at another time. So they're totally doing that. And they're totally creating good guys and bad guys. Although, frankly, by the end of it, everybody was a bad guy. Like, you just didn't like anybody. It was an oddly fascinating look at a very weird corner of America. And I don't mean Oklahoma. I just mean, like, American society. Like, there are these very odd corners, like people who want to own giant exotic cats, you know, that should be in the wild. And you and I have both known because of some novels we read, dystopian novels, post-apocalyptic novels, that the population of wild cats like tigers in America is like several times larger than the population in the wild. And that if anything ever happened, like the collapse of society, 10,000 lions and tigers, oh my, would be roaming the streets hunting everything.
If they were let out of their cages.
If they were let, which they probably, many of them would be. But that would be an interesting is to kind of set it up more than Sterling did, Stephen Sterling, which I'm going to talk about in a second, and have it that they really do grow into these large packs that are hunting humans. That would be an interesting.
Right, right. His premise was that because the kind of people who care for these large animals tend to care more about the animals
than about people.
If a cataclysm happened, they might well let the animals go.
Die in a cage. They let them out.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, just it was a train wreck from front to back. I watched the whole thing. Then there was this extra, like, they, because it was so popular, Netflix wanted to capitalize on it. So they did a reunion show, which was Joel McHale, an actor, from his house on an iPhone, interviewing people who were in the show from their homes on iPhones because of the lockdown quarantine thing. And it was just weird because he's not a journalist. He's an actor. He's a comic actor. So he was making like weird remarks, like if you were hanging out at a bar with these people and the kind of weird stuff you'd want to talk about. It was kind of that. I didn't watch the whole thing. I stopped.
So that reminds me of my favorite so far homemade news TV show.
Which is what?
I'm blanking on the name now. Suddenly the good stuff.
John Krasinski's Some Good News.
Some Good News. That is an amazing show, by the way. If you haven't seen it on YouTube,
he's got a YouTube channel. Facebook. Some Good News. Yeah,
it's fabulous.
It's like the exact opposite of Tiger King.
Yeah, I mean, not that I've seen Tiger King, but
it is. Yeah,
I've loved it. There was one my favorite episode so far.
Which, of course, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, it was the Hamilton one. So there was a little girl who had tickets to see Hamilton, and of course she couldn't go because everything's canceled.
Right. In Orlando, I think it was. The traveling show.
Right. The traveling show. So he FaceTimes her.
She also is a fan of
Mary Poppins. He had seen, I guess, on like her parents had posted on like Twitter or something that they'd watched Mary Poppins, the new Mary Poppins, because Lin-Manuel was in it, and at least she could see Lin-Manuel Miranda, even if she couldn't see Hamilton. It was sort of an okay second.
And of course,
best.
John Krasinski is married to Emily Blunt, who was Mary Poppins in the new Mary Poppins movie, and so therefore is friends with Lin-Manuel Miranda because they were in it together. So. So Emily Blunt and John Krasinski are on Zoom with her.
Right. And then she's like very excited, you know.
Oh, it's Mary Poppins.
I get to marry Mary Poppins. And you can tell she's kind of happy. Like,
yeah,
it's cool. Like you get to meet a star on camera.
And then suddenly
to you. And then suddenly Lin-Manuel Miranda pops in.
Like, hey, wait a minute. And just a long story short. And then like suddenly it's dun 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 dun, dun. Then they go into the first song from Hamilton
with the entire
the cast are showing up,
original cast.
What's his name? Who plays Aaron Burr, sir?
Leslie Odom Jr.
Leslie Odom Jr. shows up, and everybody, Renee Goldsberry, and like the whole cast is there, including the bit players, like the chorus, like everybody is there singing,
and they're obviously in their living rooms, their bedrooms, the hallway. You can tell that like they just like found some corner of their apartment that they could record in, and they're all like just wearing street clothes, and
so the girl is kind of speechless. But doesn't know how to react.
Right.
She's like a typical 8-year-old kid or whatever she is. The mom behind the scenes, you could hear the mom squealing at times. And then John Krasinski said, and then when this is all over and the shows are back on, Emily and I are paying for you to go to New York with your mom to go see Hamilton on Broadway.
That was really cool.
That was wicked cool. So. But he keeps doing things like that. He did a thing where he gave a lifetime Red Sox tickets to the COVID-19 unit at Brigham and Women's Hospital here in the Boston area, in his hometown. He's from Newton, Massachusetts. And so he gave it to them, and they got a tour of Fenway and all this other stuff. They did a virtual senior prom for all the seniors who didn't get to have their senior prom this year. They just, like last week, they did a virtual worldwide senior prom. Actually, I don't know what happened. I didn't look because that's not my thing. But and then he just highlights good news everywhere, like all the good things. So it's so relentlessly positive and fun. And John Krasinski just seems like such a great guy.
It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, he's an actor, so it could be all a put on, But hey, fun.
But the good news that he's highlighting is actual real news I've seen. Yes. A lot of it, items that I've seen other places. So it's nice to have somebody actually focus on the good news for a change.
Exactly. So something else I wanted to mention that I read, speaking of Stephen Sterling, I finished his book called Shadows of Annihilation, Black Chamber. It was the third part of a trilogy, of an alternate history trilogy. And the alternate history starts with Taft, William Howard Taft, President Taft, who in this book dies of a heart attack before the nomination for his second term, I guess it was. And the vice president can't run for whatever reason. So long story short, Teddy Roosevelt gets reelected as president again and has learned his lesson from the first time and implements this massive change in American policy. And there's a fascinating element to it, which is a lot of what we see Roosevelt implement looks familiar from those elements of eugenics and socialism there's nationalism where the individual subsumes to the state. But all this occurs before communism, before fascism, before all that stuff. And so therefore it doesn't carry the stigma that it does today. And so there were elements of it, people like us, we'd be like, oh, they're very much big family. Having a big family is important, very pro-family. It's in like certain conservative values. Mm-hmm. But then there are other things where it's like, the importance of the state and other stuff. It's kind of fascinating to see what happens over time, including what happens with World War One in Germany and some of the things. And but that's sort of the big picture. The smaller picture is that he creates a secret police. This is long before there was a CIA. But a sort of equivalent to the CIA called the Black Chamber. They're part of the Secret Service at this point. And we follow this one particular Black Chamber operative who she goes through these various adventures with this companion, this Irish-American woman from Boston. There are parts of it I don't like. He spends a lot of time with characters sitting around talking about the world that he's created. Like how the world, this new alternate history works. So it gets kind of long at those points. And he gets really into there is an immoral relationship between the two women. Just put it that way. That I just found kind of tedious, like overdone. And not, it didn't even really feel all that believable the way they reacted to each other. It was sort of like, I don't know. It was kind of weird. So I don't know that I can recommend it, I've liked other books of Sterling's, but I really liked the idea and the premise. And I'm kind of into this alt history stuff, and it's kind of fascinating to me, the alt history aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
So not a recommendation, but just something interesting. And then recently watched, and this will be the last thing I mention, because I got a couple of things. I'll save them for next time. But season 6 of Bosch on Amazon Prime. Bosch is a detective, a homicide detective in Los Angeles, who it's a character from a book by Michael Conley. They've adapted it for TV. And the character's Harry Bosch, or his real name is Hieronymus Bosch, the Flemish painter? Flemish? Dutch? Painter. Yeah. European painter. But his parents apparently liked the association. But he's a LA detective. It's its sixth season. It's really good show. The fifth season lagged a bit. I think the fourth and fifth seasons were not as good as the first three, but this one really picked right back up. I really felt like this was as good as any of the other seasons. And there's one more season left, season 7, that they've said is going to be the final season. So it's very interesting. I really kind of like it. I like especially the relationship between him and his daughter, especially as it's developed. Like with the first season, she's like a 14 or 15 year old, but now she's a college student, and they've really developed their relationship. This father-daughter relationship was really cool. I really, really like the way they portrayed it. And I like the actor Titus Welliver. I've liked him in things he's done. He was in Lost. He was the Black Smoke Monster.
Right.
Yeah. The human version of the Smoke Monster. But so I really like Titus Welliver. He's really good. So Bosch, check that out on Amazon Prime. So. Those are what I had to
talk about. I feel like I should say that I've watched something, but I can't remember what I've watched.
Well, you watched Clone Wars. I come to bed last week.
Clone Wars?
Star Wars. Was it Clone Wars or Rebels?
No, I watched. I caught up with the kids on the Star Wars Rebels.
Right. So I come to bed and I see that you're watching Star Wars Rebels. And I'm like, you've never been more attractive to me than now.
Oh, I also watched Thor.
Oh, yes. The original Thor movie,
Which I'd never seen. I read the Dolaire's Greek Norse mythology to the kids, and it was kind of weird, surreal to see it portrayed on the screen. And I mean, elements of it are pretty much right out of the myth books. The kids' picture books. In fact, at one point, there's a great scene where the modern Americans actually go into a bookstore and pick up a kid's book of Norse mythology and are looking at it. And I really liked that nod. It wasn't Dolaire's, but it was a different one.
Yeah.
But
that's one of the things that with the Marvel universe, they really dig deep into the Norse mythology. You've got Heimdall and the Rainbow Bridge. And like all of that stuff is in there.
That was kind of fun. I mean, I didn't necessarily agree with all the portrayals. Like the portrayals of all the characters weren't necessarily what I would have imagined them to be.
Did you watch? You said you watched Ragnarok.
I also watched Ragnarok.
Yeah. So Cate Blanchett as Freya.
Yeah, that was weird.
So like, because you haven't really watched any of the Marvel movies. You've seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, seen
Iron Man.
I think I saw the first Iron Man.
Right.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of friends who are Marvel fans, but it's not that I don't. I mean, I would never be a super fan probably, but
mm-hmm.
It's just mostly I just felt like I wasn't interested at the time that you were watching some of them.
Right.
And then like I was so far behind, I just felt there was no point. Like there was no way I was ever going to catch up.
Before you could get them all in one place on Disney Plus.
Right. But see, that's the thing is now the barrier is very low because we've subscribed to Disney Plus. I don't have to pay any extra to see these. And I can just say, you know what? I'm really too tired to read tonight. I don't feel like doing anything. I just want to watch a stuff blow up movie. And let's face it, Thor was a really good stuff blow up movie.
Yes. And Ragnarok is a funny stuff blow up movie.
Yes.
So I have to get you like to watch the Captain Americas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Those would be good. Like Winter Soldier is a really good one, but yeah, I've been rewatching a lot of them. I've watched Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, which now I remember why I didn't really remember that, because it was not very memorable. I rewatched the original Thor, Captain America, and Captain America Winter Soldier. I recently rewatched. So now I have to do the Avenger movies. Oh, and I watched the first Avenger movie. But this week I have to watch Avengers Endgame, because we're going to be talking about that for an upcoming episode of Secrets of Movies and TV Shows.
I think I might actually sit down with you and watch it.
She's going to jump right to the end.
Why not? I mean, honestly, let's face it. I kind of have had it spoiled already.
Yes.
It's so been talked. It was so talked about on social media at the time it came out, and everyone was watching it.
I'm going to spend the first 5 minutes explaining what happened in the first movie to you, aren't I?
Probably. Maybe I'll watch
a long movie on top of it, and I've got to watch this like tomorrow night. So
maybe I'll watch the other one tonight or something.
Maybe.
Probably not.
So that's coming up. We should have done one of those videos of, like, you know, you talking about the movie you haven't seen that everybody else has seen. You know, one of those things. Like,
oh yeah,
like the person who's never seen Star Wars watching Star Wars.
that would have been funny.
Yep. All right. So let's finish things out with let's talk about today. We had Mass with Cardinal Sean again. This has become our thing. We have Mass with Cardinal
Sean. I think the kids have decided that that's really what they like to do. I feel a little bit bad because
our parish is live streaming.
Our parish is now live streaming, but the sound quality isn't great. And the time of day when it's airing is also
awkward time, like late. It's late.
It's later than our usual Mass.
Right. I mean, it's like 11, which once you're done with that, it's the day's gone. Like, in fact, today felt like the day was gone because we didn't finish Mass until 10 o'clock. And so that felt like the day was gone. So we usually go to an 8 o'clock Mass.
Right.
So, but Cardinal Sean is doing a Mass. I think he's doing daily Mass at Catholic TV. And on Sundays, they do the set. They record it on Saturday for the anticipatory Mass, and then they edit it to fit in a half hour.
It's very tightly edited.
Very tightly. But there's still music, which is nice. I still love the music. They have opening and closing hymns, and they sing the psalm. So there's still music, but there's a lot of moving about that they've cut out and that sort of thing.
Which makes for a nice short Mass.
He still gives a homily, and it's a good homily, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But yes, but it's a short homily. It doesn't have as many of his stories as he usually has.
Right.
I kind of wish it was longer.
I could go for a longer homily, but in some ways, I really don't mind a half-hour Mass. I mean, you know,
because you're sitting at home watching the TV.
Yeah, because you're sitting at home in the office, not even, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so different. And in fact, I've heard from some people who say they've given up on even watching Mass on the live stream.
I feel like for our family culture, it works for us.
Yes.
And I do not cast any aspersions. If live streaming Mass does not work for you, I am not judging you.
10 years ago, it wouldn't have worked.
No.
Or how old has Ben?
He's 10.
10. Like even 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a time when Ben spent Mass laying on the floor under the pew because he just couldn't bear it.
Yeah.
Like, and so what it would be like here, trying to make them sit when they were that young, sit and watch a TV of Mass.
Right. If we had anybody younger than Lucy, there would be running around the house. They would not be sitting and neatly watching.
I get it. I'm not holding anybody to that standard. Yeah. But for us, it works. And
the kids generally are all really engaged. They sit, stand, and kneel and say the responses. And I think that it really works for us spiritually as our domestic church, our form of keeping the Lord's Day.
And so it's recorded by Catholic TV, so right. High quality recording. Everyone's mic'd up properly. Usually, there was actually one point in today's Mass where the priest, the concelebrant, was not on mic.
Yeah, and then the poor cardinal was kind of standing there waiting for him to turn on his mic. Like, he kind of got a quizzical look on his face, like, are you going to finish the prayer that you just started?
Yeah, exactly. I think someone had to run to bring him the handheld mic.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so it's a strict half hour. But and in fact, the cardinal has been doing daily Masses on Catholic TV.
You mentioned that.
It was my understanding. But it was interesting because he's really made a commitment to being available. I mean, what's he doing? Like, he's not going flying off to Rome and doing the things he usually does. He's available. But there's really this commitment from him to do this, to every Sunday he's doing this mass. And it's really kind of neat that he's making that commitment. So today was the gospel for the road to Emmaus, as we know.
One of my favorites.
One of my favorites too. And one of the things that came up is how the road to Emmaus is a very, they're all Catholic gospels, but this is yet another very Catholic gospel if you look at it through Catholic eyes. Because one of the things that happens is there's the Jesus in disguise gives the complete exposition of the scriptures as they walk, which, as Scott Hahn calls it, the greatest Bible study in history. He goes through all the prophets and how those prophecies apply to him.
And it must have been a fairly long Bible study.
Yes, it was a long walk. I had been like an all day walk. Reminds me of the days when I would travel from Boston to Steubenville, you know, when I was going to school, mm-hmm. and it was like an 11-hour drive, and I would have the Scott Hahn tape series, and so I'd put the first tape in as I left the house, and the last tape would end probably about like 15 minutes from my apartment in Steubenville.
And the funny thing is, you know, I actually remember commuting between Dallas and Austin when I was living in Dallas and my parents were in Austin, listening to Scott Hahn's Bible study on Revelation on cassette tapes.
That's so funny.
Yeah, my dad gave it to me, and I listened to that driving back and forth on I-35.
My favorite one was the his exposition on salvation history, which is his bailiwick. That's Scott Hahn's. But so you can imagine what it was like for these two disciples on their way to Emmaus. So they have the scripture and a homily essentially, and then when they get there, they then have a meal where they have the breaking of the bread where Jesus is revealed. Huh, what does this remind us of? We have some scripture, a homily, and then breaking of the bread in which Jesus is revealed. Huh, that sounds like the Mass, which is exactly what it was. And Cardinal Sean was talking about that. That sounds like the Mass. So it must be really amazing. One of the things he actually mentions is, could you imagine if the disciples were when Jesus was like, well, I'm going to makes as if to continue going on. Well, I've got a ways to go still. And they didn't say, no, come stay with us and have a meal with us. They just like, yeah, see ya.
Right. I really liked that point that we have to invite Jesus in. Oh, he's waiting for an invitation, but we need to make that invitation.
Right.
That they were being, as he said, all Christians. Jesus taught his followers to welcome the stranger. And so they were doing as they had been taught. They were welcoming him as a stranger, which I thought was, you know, it was really nice because they were acting Christ-like, because they were being good Christians.
The way he taught them.
And inviting in the stranger.
They received this grace.
They received the Eucharist. Wow.
Right.
Jesus himself.
May we encounter Jesus on the way and have him invite him in to join us so we can receive the Eucharist sometime soon.
Yes.
That would be nice. So I guess that should do it. So glad to be back. We should be back next week, God willing. Creek don't rise. nothing bad happens, but we'll be back. We just needed a little bit of a break. So we're going to take a moment here to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Paul, Les, Andrew, John, and Steve. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback for us, anything you want to say, anything on any of the things we've discussed, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And like I said, we'll put the relevant links from our discussion, including the links to those two articles on homeschooling, in our show notes at sqpn.com. If you can, we greatly appreciate it. We've had a few reviews written at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast from. We really do appreciate it, because not just because it strokes our ego, but because it does, but because it helps other people find the show. Those reviews goose the system and encourage it to show the podcast to other people when they're searching for things. So we really appreciate that. And if you can share the podcast with your friends, help us grow this community of listeners. We really enjoy connecting with you all in this way through this podcast. And we love that the podcast audience has been growing. Very gratified by that. So until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.